Hey.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah. So we're drinking coffee.
It's 3 a.m.
3 a.m. on Friday the 13th.
Yes, and we just got
The
back.
month is February.
We just got back from
A midnight showing of
Friday
Friday
the
the 13th.
13th.
All I'm okay. The sum it up, no one can ruin Friday the 13th. This director fucking tried to,
He tried
but you
harder.
cannot kill Jason Voorhees. Jason Voorhees can't be killed. I'm gonna play a song now.
Yeah, do it.
Okay, yeah.
We're back.
We're back.
That was
Back with a vengeance.
That was Ennio Morricone, the theme from Five Man Army.
Yeah, you picked the music.
I got to pick the music tonight. I'm kind of
Yeah,
kinda
I let him choose the music. Okay, well, yeah. Welcome to episode 3
of Late Night at the Movie Emporium. Tonight's episode.
Oh, first we should introduce ourselves. I am Eli Osman.
And I'm Andrew Ford, and tonight's episode is
Yes, big
part
episode.
One.
Yeah, this is part one of our...
Of two parts.
Of our podcast.
Exploitation cast. Your
okay, I'm
going to
go ahead and warn you now. Since we're talking all about exploitation films...
We will randomly slip into accents.
Of Australian accents, because...
Not rehearsed accents.
We can't do Australian accents good, but I'm going to tell you now, that's probably the best accents we can both do.
Crikey.
So, you pofta! It's fun.
You're a tosser.
Okay, but first, let's...
We have to talk about other more important things than our actual podcast episode topic. Namely, what happened.
Yeah, we just got back about a half hour ago and saw a midnight showing of Friday the 13th.
Yeah, we did.
Woo!
First, okay, you'll I don't know if you know this, but it probably won't surprise you. It's the first Friday the 13th film I've seen in theaters.
Really?
Including Freddy vs. Jason, yeah.
I have seen Jason X and the Freddy vs. Jason in theaters.
Oh, you didn't see? Well, oh, I guess Jason
and I saw was... and I saw the original Friday the 13th in theaters. I mean, not when it was, came out, but I saw it on Halloween. They showed it in
I didn't.
I was a freshman then.
I didn't go to that, did I?
You didn't go to. You weren't.
I weren't. No, they showed it the year after because they showed like the same films because they showed.
No, the year after was Nine with Dad.
Oh, okay, never mind.
Yeah. But okay, yeah, and anyone who knows me, I know I'm a huge Friday the 13th fan.
That's why you wore your CB4 shirt to the screening.
No, I had my Friday the 13th shirt on earlier, and I'm like, I don't want to be that guy.
Yeah. Yeah,
so
you're the CB4 crew.
Yeah, if they would show CB4 in a movie theater again, I'd wear the shirt.
You'd be that guy for CB4.
Hell yeah, I would be for CB4. But yeah, so.
Well, I mean,
I was really excited about this movie, probably because as remakes go, everyone watches remakes, but no one likes them.
And most movies are considered, you know, there's movies that are remade, like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, that are considered sacred. You know, like, you
really
don't want to
sacred. It's just,
well,
I don't know.
To people who hold things sacred,
yeah,
that's one of the things.
Yeah, and
but then Friday the 13th, to you, even like a fan who grew up with it,
you can't ruin Friday the 13th.
That's what we thought going in, and we still think that.
Yeah,
in spite of everything.
The director,
in spite of a lot.
He tried to.
Marcus fucking Nispel. Because if your name's Marcus Nispel, that's all you're doing.
I hate the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remakes. I don't know. I hated all the characters. I hated the look for it.
I want to mention real quick,
Friday the 13th because he has that like
the
dark
shaky
and,
cam.
Shaky, like the dark and dingy
shallow depth of field. Well, I did want to mention Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake because it's been popping up on a lot of lists. Not my list at all of best horror remakes of all time, and that's bullshit.
Probably
don't
because
let anyone tell you otherwise. It's a fucking piece of shit.
Oh, it is.
And it's a disgrace to the original film and its first sequel.
They just had Leatherface as a killing machine. When in the original one, he would just listen to whatever his family told him to. He was like, yeah, he was a sick and twisted man.
And the original one had some serious, like, it had some really good dark humor.
Yeah,
in it too.
The whole thing was a dark
comedy. It was really funny. And it,
yeah,
you know,
and this
and
one was all like
one,
trying to be like a serious horror film, and like, and at the end they had like Leatherface like with his mask off. Who wants to see Leatherface with a mask off? No one cares. And then they like cut off his arm. He's all like, ah, and he dies. And then they realize, oh, we want to make a sequel,
so
but
they
we
make,
killed him off. So they made a prequel instead, which is fucking useless.
That has got to be the only horror movie. I mean, are there other horror movie prequels?
No, not really.
Yeah,
Exorcist.
Exorcist, yeah, that's one. That makes sense, because Satan's, you know.
I mean, no one really cares enough. I mean, it's just like, I mean,
only Satan gets horror
movies.
See,
horror movies, you don't have that much continuity.
As established by the Friday the 13th series.
Yeah, I mean, like, what?
At the end of part 4, he's dead for good. He's macheted in the face.
Yeah, then he comes back as a zombie in part 6, and then at the end of part 7, he collapses and then from, like, he gets pulled under from the dad, from the dead dad of the telekinesis girl.
And then at the end of,
and then
oh
the
my
whole,
God,
and
that's
the whole
right.
bridge collapses,
well, yeah,
or the whole, like, dog collapses, and then the next one, he doesn't even, like, come
yeah,
back to life.
Yeah, in part 8, he's just there. He doesn't have to come back to life. He just takes Manhattan, because it's there for the
But
taking.
The reason he got out from 6 is because her telekinesis powers.
Right.
She had a big spike, and bam, brought Jason back.
Yeah, they tried for a little while, and then at the end of 8, like, he turns into a little Asian kid under the subway hit with the
toxic waste goes through the sewer system. See, we can't even talk about the remake without talking about how much we love the other one.
There's a lot of groundwork to be laid before
we get
to the remake.
Okay, the one thing I hated about this movie, which wasn't for that, I probably had no problem with the movie whatsoever, is the way it looked.
It looked horrible.
And
at first, I was wondering if it was a projector because several shots were out of focus.
Well,
but it wasn't just that.
I think it was that a little, but like that bothered me a little. But no, it was just that dark and dungy, kind of like trying to copy Saw, that type of look.
Several times you like
leaned
over to me and you're like,
"Why
does it look weird to you?" I was like, "I thought you were talking about it being out of focus," but no, like the whole thing, the way you can't see half of it.
No.
You just can't. It's not like if it's too fast, you're too old, if you can't keep up. No, it's just too. It's incoherent whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean.
Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Other than that, I had just a big problem with that. But other than that, I mean, the writers are the same writers, I think, who done Freddy vs. Jason.
And Jason X.
I think one of them may work in Jason X. Yeah. I might be wrong, but I probably am. Because I don't remember all the writers.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Friday the 13th series hasn't been about the writers.
No. But you can tell the writers are big fans of it, and like a lot of the dialogue, they have a lot of cheesy 80s slash movie dialogue, and they have the very basic characters, which I enjoyed that. I enjoyed that aspect of it.
There was but the way it looked,
it just didn't seem to work. Because what you said, it's like you're hoping like the dialogue and stuff would seem like a cheesy sitcom like the other ones.
Yeah, and it might have if it wasn't shot like a John Cassavetes film.
Since we both go to college and in our school, like, telecommunications is real big. And that's like I don't know. That's what the people who are into film but know nothing about film and just want to focus on the technical aspects of it, they go to video production and the telecommunications schools.
There's a certain school of thought that just wants to make things look good.
It looks like if those people would have made it.
Who only
care about the technical stuff.
It's all surface. There's no thought on the part of the director put into story or character whatsoever. I mean, it's a Friday the 13th movie, but
it seems like a student film where they have a good DP, but they have no idea what the fuck they're doing.
Yeah, basically.
So that's what we see a lot. And
I mean it. You know, in the end, it is, you know, before I forget, I almost forgot, the one line in the script that is excellent is they pull out some beer at the very beginning, the first group of people, and they say, "Don't you have Heineken or something?" Or something like that. They say, "Where's the Heineken?" And they said, "Heineken, fuck that shit, Pabst Blue Ribbon," more or less.
Yeah.
It's Blue Velvet. I don't know. It's kind of neat. Kind of, it had nothing to do with Friday the 13th, but it was fun.
They had a very similar speech on The Kingdom.
Yeah.
Where they talk about the best beer.
Bateman's
like, "It's Pabst. Pabst beer." But, that was a lame joke.
It was. We need to cut.
I'm not going to edit that.
No one wants to edit. Neither of us want to edit it, so it's staying in.
Okay. And the gore wasn't that good.
Where was it?
There wasn't much gore.
There wasn't any. There were plenty of boobs.
Oh, yeah. There's one part where this girl with like brings her jugs out, and he's like, your tits are
stupendous, perfect nipple placement. It was,
and I would agree with him. I mean, it wasn't the entire line. They were good breasts. Yeah. I'll give him that.
You know what? I think he ad libbed it. I think he was just stunned into ad libbing.
But
definitely not in the script.
They focus a lot on the sex, but like some of the death scenes weren't that bad.
There's one awesome death scene.
There's a couple cool death scenes, but there was no gore involved. That's what made Friday the 13th different from the rest of the slasher movies that came out at the same time, was it had a lot of gore. It was the first one to have over the top gore,
and it would have
in the slash movie.
And it would have some really elaborate slasher, you know, some really elaborate deaths. And this had a couple, but you couldn't really tell. You don't really get to see them because the camera.
Probably because they was trying to make it's all because of the nudity, not because of the violence that much.
No, they could cut maybe
but most likely they probably have more gore for the unrated version because that's what they normally do.
No, they don't. I don't think there's much more. It doesn't look like they cut around gore. It just looks like they didn't shoot it.
Mm-hmm. But they're making more sequels, and
hire another fucking director.
Yeah, I just hope they get another director there, preferably a fan of the series.
Yeah, Marcus Nispel, please stop working.
Yeah, because
you were fucking horrible.
Because a lot of the death scenes were pretty much stolen directly from the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake.
Like, I'm not even.
He even had characters referencing.
Oh my god! Yeah, I almost forgot about that. Yeah.
Which I'm just like, no one fucking cares about that movie. Everyone here is here because we love Jason Voorhees, and you know we can't fuck it up. But god damn it, he tried his hardest.
He called back to his other remake of a horror classic. What the fuck are you thinking when you do something that asinine?
I mean, you're not fucking Joss Whedon or Stephen King. You can't just throw characters in your other movies and other stories.
You're not creating your own universe.
No,
you fucking chotch bag.
No. Fuck you, guy. Fuck you.
What are the specific? It's the guy in the oxygen yeah. oxygen tank in the tow truck, and there's
we would have known this if I would never known this if
if we hadn't gone with a couple of our friends
who know those movies and are like, oh, that's the character from that. I'm like, really?
Yeah, they know and loathe these movies, but they know them. I never would have picked these.
And Jason lives in like in these underground tunnels that supposedly he built. I guess
I think Leatherface built them.
Yeah, because it looks like it's stolen. It was stolen because that could make sense because the Texas Chainsaw Massacre took place in the '70s, and this is in present. So,
I mean, and
that's probably what the second one's going to be about.
The second Friday the 13th is going to tie up all the loose ends left, but, you know, and it's going to make... it'll be Leatherface versus Jason, and they'll have a big crossover franchise. God,
no one wants to see Leatherface fight Jason.
Leatherface is not a villain. Leatherface is just misunderstood. He's a retard. And Jason's a retard, too, but, you know, they're not going to fight each other because they don't want to kill each other. They want to kill teenagers. They have different motives.
It worked with Freddy vs. Jason because Freddy was using Jason for his own things, and then
Freddy and Jason had the same modus operandi for like their killing. Like they both kill teenagers.
Yeah,
specifically for having sex and doing drugs, and sleeping.
Yeah,
where Leatherface kills them to stay in business.
Yeah,
it's different. It's different. There's subtle differences, trust me, between serial killers.
I think they should brought Tom Savini back in to do the gore, or KB Infects, which came from him.
Yeah,
with something like that. Who's just
I don't know who did the gore for this, but if they did more that was really great that got cut out, I couldn't tell.
I think they should bring the Adam Green guy come into who did a Hatchet.
Yeah, if you want to see a Friday the 13th remake, see Hatchet.
And maybe awesome. Trying to get hold of him and have him do the second one, because you know it's going to be an awesome, amazing movie if he did that. He pretty much made it.
Right.
And you know who played that?
Victor Crowley?
Crowley.
I was going to say that was who played it.
Yeah, it was Kate Otter.
The name of the character is Victor Crowley. Which, by the way, the preview for Hatchet is on pretty much every Anchor Bay DVD, including the His Name Was Jason DVD we got our free Friday the 13th ticket with.
As that documentary goes...
I'm happy about that.
Free ticket. We've seen that... Most people listen to this, I assume.
I mean, if you've listened this far to us like rant about Friday the 13th, then odds are good that you've either seen the
His Name Jason documentary goes, we'll talk a little about that. It's okay.
I mean, it's the production value is kind of silly.
Yeah, I'm not going to say it's like cheap. Stuff it's just we've silly. Already seen, but they have some new added stuff I thought was kind of interesting. There were certain things I never thought of. They talked about it in there.
What I thought was funny was they interview people involved with the series and stuff, and then they interview and critics and stuff and fans, and then they interview one of the co-leads on the USA show Psych.
I guess he's a fan, but it's quite a good fan. There's tons of good other special features I haven't gotten to watch yet, but it seemed like a good, solid DVD. And
it's a two-disc set, comes with a free ticket.
Yeah, $10, two-disc set, comes with a free ticket. I say, if you're planning to see the remake anyway,
buy that DVD. It's $10.
And go see the movie, because you get tons of great stuff in there.
And that DVD, it's a good set.
That's what I love about remakes nowadays, is that mostly like the remake of My Bloody Valentine.
You get the uncut version of My Bloody Valentine.
Yeah, but there'll be some uncut version of that, which I was super psyched for.
Yeah.
And they did the same thing with the Friday the 13th one.
They put out 3D, and they put out the first one in Blu-ray.
Yeah, and uncut. I mean, we can't watch Blu-ray, because we're not made of money.
Yeah, but, you know, in the future, when we want to, we can now. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we've done.
I think we talked about as much as we can.
I don't know. If you're a fan, you're gonna see it anyway. So I guess.
That's our opinion of it. I mean, if we would have to rate it, you rate it a 3 out of 10?
I gave it a 3 out of 10, but I tend not to rate the Friday the 13th films that high. I enjoy them more than what I rate them normally, but this one,
You give the actual grade it deserves, and then you rate it for entertainment value.
Well, for entertainment value and for the actual grade it deserves, I'd probably give it the same. That's the thing about this one.
Yeah,
because I was enjoyable, but not only slightly above where, you know,
it was cool to see a new Friday the 13th movie in theaters, but at the same time, it's just like, to me, this seems like a straight-to-DVD movie. That's what it should be.
There's so many great like little things with some of the characters. Like, oh, yeah. the one guy's like, you're such a dick. And then he hates him the entire movie, just because, I forget, that's like no reason. Yeah, like, he's at the counter at the gas station.
And you know, I mean, yeah. But see, the only thing that saved this movie is the script.
Yeah, really, seriously. The script is there, it's just
Because that director tried everything else to just, yeah. But I actually believe this is probably the worst one.
It has no
character. It's still entertaining. It's still enjoyable.
The direction sucks all the life out of the film.
We talked about it for 20 minutes, so we should either get to the topic. All right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we should go ahead and get the topic.
We going to take a break?
Yeah.
Coming up. Ladies and gentlemen.
Garth Marenghi's Dark Place.
I'm Garth Marenghi. Author, dreamweaver, visionary, plus actor. You are about to enter the world of my imagination. You are entering my dark place.
That's yeah. I finished the Garth Marenghi's Dark Place series.
Yeah, I recently downloaded on my computer a while back ago. We both and I showed it to him, and he really liked it.
It's a lot of fun. The theme is pretty excellent. So yeah, that's that.
We really should have played the Friday the 13th. I have the Friday the 13th theme from Part 3. That really were do 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 do. It's like almost I can.
We can play that again. Yeah.
I don't know. It's too late now.
Okay.
All right. It's very disco like.
We'll play it. Yeah, I remember that. I love that theme.
It's so retarded. I think it ruins the entire movie.
No, it doesn't.
No, it enhances it.
It makes it better.
I'm wrong.
Exactly the thing the remake could have used.
Okay,
for
let's get into the topic. Ausmultation. Okay.
Our first movie directed by...
Actually, first we should give...
Someone else.
First we should give what... Okay.
Yeah, I'm completely jumping the gun and like...
You are. You're completely... Fuck it. This podcast is over. It's over.
Whatever.
Okay. Ausmultation.
Well, okay.
It's exploitation films from Australia.
Basically.
I never watched. I mean, I watched like some of the basic ones, like
Mad Max. Road Warrior.
Most of these came out like early 70s to the late 80s.
Yeah,
is when there's a huge boom of these movies. Quentin Tarantino's a big fan of them. I mean, he's always referencing them in his movies and stuff like that.
And basically, like I mean, I found the documentary online.
Yeah, there's this new documentary going out online called
Not Quite Hollywood: The Untold Story of Ausploitation.
Yeah,
with an Australian. Not quite Hollywood. I just sound like a limey fuck. I can't do
racist.
It.
Racist.
Huh? Is limey racist?
Yeah, it's a racist slur towards British people.
Is it really?
Yeah, I don't know.
If it's
racist towards limes.
Yeah, well, if not, I at least offended you.
I don't know. I mean, are British people like? I never understood that.
I don't think they're very. I don't know.
Are British people made of limestone?
I found the documentary. I watched it like I had like another late night at the movie emporium watching it.
Anyway, that was lame.
That was so lame.
That was lame.
I'm sorry.
Oh God.
Anyway, I made.
We had a late night. It was a late night at the movie emporium. Oh God, that was so lame.
Anyway, I burned it to a DVD and I made you. Well, I told you to watch it.
Yeah, and it's just this big clip, and they talk about all the different like stages they had and the all exploitation era. Like they had like the sex. It starts off with the sex phones because, I mean, when it starts with exploitation, it's always sex exploitation is the main one.
And then it goes into horror.
Then it goes into horror.
And then into action, adventure, and
the action one is probably the one I was most excited for because like. Their stunts are fucking insane.
If you see a stunt in an Australian movie, they did it.
Yeah, whatever you see in Australian movies, it's real.
Even to the point where...
I don't care, man. All of it's real.
If you see somebody die, they might have died.
Yeah, because, like, their stunts was... Like, there's this...
Their stunts are retarded.
Yeah, there's one scene where there's... On one movie, it's just like... Let's say I drive a motorcycle off a cliff. Do you know how they filmed that? A guy just drove a motorcycle off the cliff. Yeah. I don't think they even, like... Did mathematics or studied it?
There was
no
debate. No, how are we gonna do it?
When they did car chases,
I can do that.
They just did car chase on the road. Like they didn't bother like getting like permits. They didn't have permits?
Yeah,
it's pretty much the entire continent of Australia is just a version of Escape from New York.
Pretty much,
because like it started off just like
it's an island for like, the convicts from it's where Britain exported their convicts and stuff.
And that's where Snake Plissken has to go to save the president.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's twice. It's just a big. I mean, it started as a big prison, so full of mostly Irish people.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a bit racist.
No, it's actually it's mostly Irish people.
No, I'm kidding.
Which we'll get into later when we talk about some of the movies.
Yeah,
and since this is part one of it, next week we'll do.
We'll start with the 80s next week, and right now
we're talking about just the films from the 70s that we watched. And there's, of course, this documentary talked about tons and tons of movies.
There's no way we could track all of them because most of them aren't available on DVD.
So we just quickly just got the ones that
appealed most to us.
Yeah,
we kind of skipped over a lot of the sex ones.
Yeah, because I mean, there was one called Stork starring one guy from Bruce Road Spence. Warrior. Yeah, Bruce Spence. Which, I heard good stuff about that one, and I heard good stories about the true story of Eskimo Neil.
Which is directed by Richard Franklin, who's one of the films we did
watch. Which also, compared to IMDb, David Byrne from Talking Heads is in that movie.
Yeah, news to me. I had no idea.
Yeah, I don't know if it's true.
I'm gonna go get some more coffee. I'm gonna refill us both.
Yeah.
All right.
More coffee.
I'll be back.
I made him get good coffee.
We'll continue explaining. Yeah.
And,
can they hear me?
Yeah. Well, the documentary, it's... A friend of mine recently seen at the Comic-Con. I told her, like, you need to go see this movie. And she loved it. It's a great documentary. And I think it's Magnolia Pictures is releasing it. So I think that's the one that... is that the...
They put out Redacted, I think
that might be the one... Does, like, Sonnenberg do that?
No,
I know a lot of Sonnenberg movies.
No, I know who it is. It's Mark Cuban, I think. No, it's not Mark Cuban. He has another company. Yeah. I'm not sure. It's not the guy who owns the Spurs, and it's not. I don't think it's Soderbergh.
Hmm.
Wait, it might be. They might have put out Bubble.
Yeah, they put out Bubble.
But I don't know if Soderbergh owns them, does he?
I don't know. But anyway. So, I don't know what's going to come on DVD. So
It's out in other countries.
If you want to watch any of these movies... I probably suggest watching this documentary first because this documentary is probably better than most of these movies.
Yeah, they put the. I mean, it, as you know, because it's all the highlights from a lot of these movies. Yeah, to be honest,
and it's really entertaining. And like, they got several different like sides of it. Like, they got this one critic who just hates all these movies, hates them.
He's awesome,
and he makes the documentary so good. And you have all these filmmakers together, all these actors. You got like people like Stacey Keach is on there,
Quentin Tarantino,
Jamie Lee Curtis.
The list goes on. Oh, Fred Schiaparelli. He has actually an Australian filmmaker. He did I forget what else. He did like some bigger movies. He went on to George Miller, of course, is on that.
Briefly.
Yeah, he talks about Mad Max.
Probably doing like Happy Feet or whatever.
No, he's too busy trying to do Justice League.
Okay.
Or whatever.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a great documentary, and we made a list of the.
We
got all the films.
And one of the first ones they talked about on there, and one of the first ones that really caught our eye.
Well, they started talking about not Australian.
This is.
These are
actually no. This is one they talked about before they got into the sex one because this is one like the Australian film industry wasn't really as strong at all. It was pretty much nothing.
It was when foreigners were coming in and making.
Yeah, and this is a movie where a foreigner came in and made it, but it had a lot of an Australian crew. And it had some like American or Canadian. I'm not really sure because the director's Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
And it's from 1971. It's called Wake and Fright.
Also known as Outback.
Yeah, and it's directed by...
Ted Kotcheff.
Who is such directors as Billy Two Hats, which I love that movie.
Yeah.
It's this great Western.
I just heard of it when he found out this guy directed it, like, an hour ago.
Yeah, and I think I saw Billy Two Hats on, like, Western Channel once. And we're like, he did...
But more importantly, he did First Blood.
Yeah, he did First Blood. He did North Dallas 40.
The original Fun with Dick and Jane.
He did Uncommon Valor.
Yeah, there's another
which
one,
is a good one with Gene Hackman. And he also directed Weekend at Bernie's. That was his last, like, big movie he directed. Now he mostly does TV.
Okay.
But, I mean, it's...
Well, yeah, pretty good director.
And this movie is... before we get into what it's about...
It's an interesting story about...
We're going to talk about how awesome this movie is and how great it is. But you're probably not going to be able to see it.
Unless...
The reason is because this movie is unavailable on both VHS and DVD.
It's one of those rare...
yeah, and we find a copy online and we download it off
cinemagen.com.
.org. Yeah, and it's a torrent file, which, ooh, drum the torrents, ooh.
Sorry, it's unavailable.
If it gets movie piracy, you probably should not listen to us, because the type of movies we talk about is rare cult movies, which don't actually have a place.
If you're against movie piracy, I think even you have to concede that if you can't buy it, you're free to download it.
Yeah.
If no one's going to release it, which no one has yet, we'll buy it when it comes out.
But what's this movie about?
Drinking.
I mean, before we give that, what's the actual synopsis? It's about this British teacher who's made to go...
relocated to the outback.
Yeah, part of like a... I think it might be part of like... They do that with doctors here. That's what Northern Exposure is kind of about. About how like the pay for some of your college and stuff, you get like a scholarship or something, or a grant. You get like a grant from like a different place, like... In the show Northern Exposure, Rob Morrow is a doctor, and he gets grants from like Alaska. So after he gets out of college, he has to go to Alaska and practice medicine for a little while, and then come back. That sort of thing.
So here it's that kind of setup.
They do that thing a lot of times with doctors, but I don't know if they do that much with teachers here in the States. But in Australia, apparently they do. And it's all about this English teacher who's. He goes to Australia and he's going to be a teacher in this small town.
Yeah, it's a small town and
and pretty much the small town consists of just drinking
and like a bar.
Yeah,
there's a bar and drinking in this
but,
town.
The only actor that's actually known in this movie is Donald Pleasance.
Right.
The rest are actually kind of familiar.
A young and svelte.
Yeah, he's
Donald Pleasance.
I mean, he still looked fat and chunky.
He's still got some
like,
meat on his
there's a lot of the movie you see him with like his shirt off and stuff.
Yeah, and he just looks happy.
Yeah, you know? I mean, he does
because he is drunk most of the time.
Yeah, I mean, but he doesn't look like as fat as you'd think he would be.
And
like,
even though this isn't a film made by Australian filmmakers, we still assume that everything that happened was real.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
And some of it we know for a fact actually is, because at one point they actually do
the movie starts off with the main actor. He gets to the small town and he's showed around on what to do, and all people are pretty much doing is drinking.
Well, they play
gambling.
That game. Yeah,
it's weird gambling.
It's like X's and O's or something.
No, it's like flipping a coin, and they bet on what side is which. That sort of thing. They do
that. The laziest drinking
game
ever.
And then they drink more, and they bet more, and they drink more. That's pretty much all they do.
Until.
The main actor's kind of against it, and then he finds himself bored, and he's like, okay, why not? And he ends up winning a lot of money, then losing a lot of money.
Yeah.
Then getting really, really drunk. And it leads to them.
Kangaroo.
Killing kangaroos,
which an actual kangaroo was killed, but it was part of like it was supervised by professionals. And it's still, I mean, they're adorable, but they're like deer here in Australia. Kangaroo are like deer are in the U.S.
I assume we
assume that's how we make ourselves.
All I know about it from Australia is from these movies and Quigley Down Under.
Well, what about
crocodile?
That isn't a knife. This is a knife.
That's a spoon. I've seen you play Knife Ace Boone before. Simpsons joke. A friend of mine was actually in a band called Knife Ace Boone.
Really? Relevant. You're relevant today.
Hell yeah, relevant.
Yeah, no, great movie.
And pretty much like the tag. Oh, I forget. I should have written down the tagline because pretty much what the whole movie is about. It's just.
I mean, look at that title, Wake and Fright. That's a sweet title.
And like, the scene we saw in the Not Quite Hollywood was just the main guy just like out of his mind. Just dragging a gun with him in a city.
It was like, this is whatever's
going on in the movie. Yeah. It reminds you a lot of, like Vampire Kiss. Didn't it remind you of a lot of Vampire
A little bit
Kiss?
Of that, and a little bit of when Ron Burgundy's walking around drinking milk in Anchorman.
Oh, yeah.
Milk was a bad choice.
Yeah, and like this character, he just like drinks,
slowly goes
and
just, insane.
Yeah, slowly going insane, and just, because they call this town Paradise. It's paradise because with all the alcohol in the system, it's paradise. Without that, they realize they're living in hell.
Right, and like by the end, he becomes like this like rotten.
Yeah,
alcohol,
and
like,
he tries to kill himself.
Yeah,
and he does it, and then at the very end he's
isn't he back in the bar?
No, yeah, at the very end he gets back up on the train, and I guess you think he's gonna leave and get better, but he just goes back to the bar.
Yeah,
and orders something to drink. It's just, it's kind of a downer movie, probably.
Not good for this.
Probably not as downer as the rest of them.
Well, because this one's actually good.
Yeah.
And some of the other ones are pretty bad.
Yeah, this movie is amazing. It's a big unknown gem, and there's actually a cool story. The reason this isn't on VHS is because
for a long time
the original negative
prints.
Movie was lost, and they could not find any prints for years.
And
the producer was searching. For prints, and he found one in the like mid 2004 in a Pittsburgh warehouse
marked for destruction.
Yeah, that's what it had around it, marked for destruction. And
it
was just pure luck.
Kind of like how they might have found London After Midnight.
Yeah, which apparently they did, and I really like. They also did the same thing for the longest version of Metropolis.
Right. Yeah. They find these film negatives like in these vaults
because
like,
these are big collectors that collect these rare movies.
Yeah, and they're assholes if they don't share them with people. God damn it.
Yeah, and I'm so happy they found London.
Yeah, London After Midnight.
I just can't wait because I'm a huge Todd Browning fan, and most of his movies are hard to get a hold of.
Yeah, just looking at, like, they have, like, maquettes of Lon Chaney in that movie, just, it's terrifying. Because
I watched the still version of it.
Yeah.
I'm like, eventually they'll find a real copy.
Yeah. But yeah, Wake and Fright, hopefully there's a DVD out soon.
But you can actually get a job, there's actually the people, that's their job, is to locate old film copies like that. They're like Indiana Jones, but for like rare film copies.
Really?
And then they have to go and they're like archaeologists, but for film.
You should be able to.
I don't know. I just think that's so cool. Like that, just you go on these weird adventures.
The people that do this are really like, I love them.
They have to. They have to be Indiana Jones. They have to be.
If there weren't people doing this,
because I would like to see. Like, if they were to release this on DVD, which I really hope they do, I really hope they come to include a documentary all about, like, this producer trying to find this film, because I would really like to hear that story of, like, him going to one source to another, to another.
I mean, it could be fun. I mean, there's so much, in, you know, gray area, like, so much that we just don't know about how long it took to find it and where they went.
Yeah.
But,
But this movie's great. I suggest you download it.
Cinemageddon.org.
You can definitely get on there. That site's kind of hard.
Yeah,
it's kind of hard to join.
Yeah.
But I say just try. If you personally know us, we can probably give you a copy of it. But until then, you can probably might be able to find another copy online, like Pirate Bay or some other.
Yeah, eventually
site.
it'll get around a little better.
And maybe you can find like a. There's a lot of those sites like Revenge Is My Destiny and sites like that.
They do.
That
produce actual bootleg DVDs. You know,
just for the hell of it's one of them, or
five minutes to live.
Which they actually sell these type of movies. I don't know how legal it is, but
yeah.
I mean, because I bought some off there before. You can see them in magazines like Shock Cinema.
You got fucking Deadly Prey.
Hell yeah,
that
I got Deadly Prey.
Such a piece of shit.
Oh, it's great.
All right, well, let's.
Okay, but let's rate it out of 10. I'm giving this an 8.
I'm in a rock solid 8. Yeah.
Yeah. This movie is great.
Typing it's, that 8 in bold, but underlined italics.
But the version we got, the quality is horrible. It's a bad VHS copy.
Yeah, which we're not sure where they got it, but that
does not hurt the movie.
Well, no, it's like a TV rip or something. It's weird.
I think they aired
maybe
on
it's
TV.
Like a, maybe I mean, if anything, I would think since they only found the one film print, it must be like a really crappy Telecine rip.
Or maybe I don't know where it's actually from. There could be VHS copies actually of it.
It could be VHS copies printed that they found.
Or maybe it's been around for a while. Beta tapes. I don't know. I really don't know. But
probably beta. Just, you know, another fuck you to VHS.
They said there's no VHS copies of it released. Maybe there could be some in Australia.
Yeah, like very rare ones in Australia,
but it's definitely never been released in America. I mean, in theaters it was, but...
Yeah. I just remembered, I was reading online, there's actually, like, some serious brush fires going on in Australia right now, so that's really kind of, I don't know, I just felt like I should mention it, since we are talking about Australia.
You're in our prayers.
I'm environmentally Yes! Thank you for saying it. Yeah. I'm environmentally conscious.
I don't pray, but...
Hmm. It's worth mentioning that I think Leonard Cohen donated $200,000 towards the people who lost their homes and stuff. Is he just performed in Australia?
Yeah, it's actually a really big deal,
is what I've been hearing.
I've been seeing his documentary yet. I don't know. Okay, next one is
it's a biker movie.
Yeah, from 1974.
This has that stunt we were talking about in
it's
it.
It's called Stone, directed by Sandy
Harbutt.
Yeah, this is probably one of the best biker movies. I mean,
I did not think I would like it because it was a biker movie, and I wasn't expecting to enjoy it.
Biker movies are so badass.
Yeah, but I was like, it's just gonna be like, I mean, it's gonna be like fucking biker boys or something, or like, you know, I don't know. It's not gonna be like.
I mean, this is more like a Hell's Angels type biker movies, even though they kick the Hell's Angels ass in it. Yeah. That's Hell's Angels Sydney. I mean, the true Hell's Angels, Hell's Angels Oakland. We all know that.
I thought you were gonna say are from hell. But yeah, I mean it's a fun movie, and what is it about? It's like one of their members gets murdered by a poofter.
Cop or reporter?
I think he's an undercover cop. No, he's a cop. No, they know he's a cop.
Huh.
I think, and he tries to join the gang to help them find the people, and they're like, "We'll deal with it on our own. It's biker gang justice."
Yeah,
poofter.
Yeah, and it's it's pretty much just like they said in the documentary. It's made like everyone. It was made like it was made by a biker gang, and it's just like all these actors took it way too serious.
Yeah.
And like when they treated women like shit in the movie, they actually did it in real life as well.
Which is kind of
because
you know,
this just proves my point that whatever you see in any of these Australian movies is real.
Can we just go ahead and say they're all documentaries now?
Yeah, they are. They're all documentaries.
I mean, we're gonna say that for the end. Like we realize all of a sudden these are all. But no, they're let's just. They're all documentaries.
They're all documentaries. And this is a great biker movie. Good luck, guys. This one's actually on DVD here in the States.
Two discs.
It's a good set.
Is it Blue Underground?
I mean, no, it's...
Synapse?
No, it's that company that released Inglorious Bastards. It's like Severin?
Severin, yeah.
Yeah, Severin. Okay. And it's a good DVD. The DVD has like...
It's on Amazon.
It has the documentary they made a few years ago. All on Stone, and I've been meaning to get I'd like to get a copy of it sometime.
Yeah,
but if you listen to this, send us a copy of it.
Yeah.
Our email address is Movie
Emporium. Send us a promotional copy, we'll review it for you.
Yeah.
Again.
It's movieemporium@gmail.com. Send us a copy. Woo!
That's it, yeah. Is our email address even on the.
I don't know, man.
Probably not. We should put it on there.
We don't know what the fuck we're doing.
We should get some like free swag and stuff. Like, you know, they'll send us like promotional shit.
No one's gonna do that.
Maybe.
Just give us free stuff.
You remember those like McWorld commercials? Maybe if this was one of those. Hey, it could happen.
What'd you write down about Stone?
I wrote down that all the best parts are in Not Quite Hollywood.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's
I mean,
the only thing.
Luckily, a lot of these movies are pretty short, which I think is probably from
Yeah, Stone's benefit. About... Stone's pushing that. If it hits 90 minutes, I'm surprised. I don't think it quite hits that. It's like 86.
And... I've always kind of liked biker, because, I mean, I always love, like, westerns and stuff, and this is pretty much, is a western.
Yeah, I mean, there's even, like, a gigantic bar fight and stuff.
I mean, biker stuff is, like, the outlaw, the rebels.
Yeah.
Punk rock!
But, again, like, you see the crazy, what is this, Grant Page? world's most insane fucking stuntman still living, does the stunt. You know, you...
Yeah, which in the beginning of the movie, it's like when they get... When the whole movie's all about that guy dying.
It's Grant Page at the
beginning. Yeah, and he's one where... And in the movie, that character dies.
And in real life, he should have died. Yeah. Because
he just drove a motorcycle off a cliff.
Into the water. And it was it, like 80 feet? Yeah. Could be fatal?
I don't think he had any, like, stunt gear on him.
I don't think he even looked it up. How high can you fall
I don't think he even knew there was water underneath there.
Yeah. He was like, is it concrete or water? I don't know.
He was probably just drove it off. We're like, wait, we're not rolling.
Yeah.
That's what I assume.
Yeah, I think they got some tourist was filming. And they got his footage.
Probably.
I mean, you never know with these fucking movies. That's what's so great about these movies.
No, the stunts are so cock hard.
And there was a good point made in the documentary by Tarantino that... Because, he said Australians shoot cars really well, and they do. If you've seen Road Warrior or Mad Max, you know. You probably have. But what he said with the... like America, only America and Australia are the only two countries to have that drive-in culture... with the movies and that fetishizing of cars.
I never really thought about that. There's a friend in China and he's like
what's a drive-in?
He knew what drive-ins were. I mean, yeah, that's because no one has cars there.
Yeah, so
it's it's true. And that's why they, cars are big there and they're big here. And then I love cars. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I used to go to car shows all the time.
I'm not like a gearhead.
And that's why you used to love Mad Max, because there's awesome car chase scenes, which we'll get to that later.
We'll get to that in a few. But Stone's a great, it's a fun movie.
Okay, let's move on to the next one. From 1974, directed by Peter Weir.
Who, everybody knows Peter Weir.
Yeah, he did Mosquito's Coast, which I love.
Remember that one critic?
One
critic we talked about earlier in the documentary who hates everything? Hates Peter Weir with a passion. That's, yeah. We had the clip on the... in the documentary.
This movie is called The Cars That Ate Paris.
Yeah, Paris is a town... It's the name of a town in Australia in this particular movie.
My movie is about Cars That Ate Paris because there's a movie called The Killer Tomatoes Eat Paris, or Eat France.
Yeah, and the tomatoes actually go to Paris, don't they?
Yeah, and I was thinking that, but no, this is Paris, Australia. I don't care about that.
It has
this movie. I did not like this movie at all. It was boring. It was. It's what's the actual movie about again? It's about like this town. This town who.
It's this weird car conspiracy. Like they use these cars to like kill tourists or something and take all their. I don't know.
Yeah, well,
it's really hard to remember. This town,
whenever people pass through, they wreck their cars and then they steal everything from that car, for money for the town.
Yeah.
And then these two brothers get in this accident and one dies, another one gets involved in this, and he ends up being part of this town. Then he learns all about this and. About how they're killing people. Yeah. I think he tries to stop it and ends with this big car chase, which that part was kind of cool, but the movie was kind of a mess.
They don't talk about this movie as much boring. In Not Quite Hollywood. They show one clip from it.
Yeah, from the car. The cars look awesome.
But they never mention the name of the movie, in the documentary.
We were kind of struggling just to pay attention to it. I think we end up just doing crap on our computer or doing whatever stuff.
I mean, this is a movie. I mean, I was interested because it's Peter Weir, Mosquito Coast, Witness, Truman Show, Master and Commander.
Yeah.
You know, good filmmaker. It's his first feature film. I was, expecting a little more, especially because the year later, he did Picnic at Hanging Rock, which is an excellent
movie. And he also did some Mel Gibson ones after that, too.
Yeah, he went on to do Year Living Dangerously and Gallipoli.
Which Peter Weir, I still think, is a good director. They're actually going to show here in Athens, Ohio.
The Last Wave.
Yeah, The Last Wave of the Cinematheque here,
I think Last Wave starts Saturday.
Yeah, at the Athena Cinema.
The Athena Cinema on Court Street. Yeah.
Yeah, they're showing that and some other
cool movies. Admission's free for student ideas.
Yeah, if not, it's $4. And if you're anywhere near the Athens area, it's
worth just, every penny.
But probably not gonna happen. But we're gonna see that. We'll probably review that one.
Even though that's we'll like I think that 78, but we'll still we're not gonna
77 actually.
77. Okay.
Yeah, but we'll mention that one like the next
episode. Yeah, Peter Weir's a really cool filmmaker.
I discovered showing that today. But Peter Weir, actually, we never rate Stone.
I give it probably a 7 out of 10.
I mean, 7 out of 10.
It surprised me.
Okay, And the Cars Ain't Paris.
One other thing I wanted to mention is it had some weird Western tone, it had this kind of mock Morricone score that didn't really work.
Yeah, and I kind of wish it did that more throughout the movie than just one or two scenes.
It comes in kind of like in the middle and it kind of jars you. Yeah, it's really weird. But yeah, I'd give Cars Ain't Paris maybe a 5 out of 10. I mean, it's...
I'd give it a 4.
It's not bad, but
it had some parts that's kind of cool, but sometimes,
But compared to the next movie...
Okay, man, moving on. This is from 1975, directed by...
Brian Trenchard Smith.
This is The Man from Hong Kong.
He's a poof. I just wanted to say that.
Okay, The Man from Hong Kong. It's...
starring everybody's favorite James Bond.
Yeah. Before we watch this, I heard of this movie just because it doesn't really star. He's the bad guy in the supporting role. George Lazenby, one of the greatest Bonds of all time.
One of the top 6.
But I mean, he's in one of the best Bond movies.
Yeah, he's in probably my favorite Bond movie.
I mean, I don't think it's my favorite, but I really like that. I mean, I really like the Bond movie, and I really liked his Bond. I thought it was
It was a different Bond.
He just never had more time to breathe.
Yeah, they only really gave him the one, and then Connery was like, "I'll come back and do it." I just sounded like I was drunk or something. Anyway,
you do good impressions there, Frank Caliendo.
At least I can speak good. Finish people's names. Man from Hong Kong.
Okay, here's the story. It stars
Jimmy Wang Yu.
It's Yu Wang.
Jimmy.
Yeah, whatever. But I think it was about
that. That's interchangeable. Yeah.
And it's about he's this big. Whatever from Hong Kong.
He might have the law on his side. He might be like a law official.
And he's hired by Australian officials, I assume?
To fight people.
To take down George Lazenby, I assume.
And we don't know what George Lazenby's doing. This one we paid attention to, by the way.
Yeah, we paid attention to this movie. And we tried. There's pretty much no story. All it is that Wang guy just... beating the shit out of everyone to the point where you have no idea if these are good guys or bad guys. You just see him beat up people randomly. You see him beat up people who look like they're just trying to, like, there's a guy going crazy. I'm gonna stop him before he kills our children.
Yeah, like there's a sequence in the movie where as with most of the movie, we don't know why he's doing what he's doing specifically. Mm-hmm. He starts climbing a building.
A lot like a Bond movie. This reminds you a lot about the theme song is very like Bond like.
It's a Bond movie without a script.
A lot of the Bond movies, like, I never know what the hell, like, the bad guy's motive is, or, like, his big evil plan. A lot of times, I never really fully understand it. I'm like, now, why is he doing this? It doesn't make any fucking sense.
Yeah, but, I mean, let's not knock Bond movies.
It kind of reminds me of that.
Much. I mean, this is way worse than any Bond movie.
But it's entertaining as hell, because the action scenes are so long, so retarded.
Well, yeah, to get back to the when he's climbing the building, is he just climbing this building to go fight some more people? And he is.
Yeah.
That's all he climbs the building to fight more people, and then he fights them on an elevator, and then he leaves the building.
Which he beats the shit out of the director, because the director plays one of the...
Yeah, the director plays one of the henchmen, Brian Trenchard.
He's really hitting
the filmmaker,
him.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this guy, the lead actor, was a complete asshole.
He didn't like...
He hated white people with a passion.
White women specifically.
He thought white women were scum.
He didn't listen to the director. Because he had directed some movies, and this was Brian Trenchard Smith's first feature film.
Yeah.
And so he didn't want to listen to him on the set, and then he beat him up on film. Pretty much. I don't know. The most interesting thing in the documentary about this film was that there's a scene where George Lazenby's character gets set on fire, and the filmmaker, I think that Brian Trenchard Smith actually set himself on fire to show George Lazenby how easy it was.
Yeah.
That everybody does it, because it's Australia. Everybody does it. It won't be too difficult. George Lazenby, you know, he's a good sport. He was like, sure, why not? You know, go ahead and set me on fire. His arm got burnt because he couldn't get his shirt off
on time. Yeah.
On time. Yeah.
So
and then apparently he punched the other cameraman or assistant, or maybe was it Brian Trenchard?
Yeah, I think it was.
And then in the interviews he's like, I don't remember doing that, and like three different people say he punched the shit out of him. So it's,
yeah,
this is a
great entertaining movie.
Yeah, action scenes.
I don't think this is available on DVD. Actually, Cars of Paris is available on DVD. Forgot to mention that. But
what do you
Man from Hong Kong? I don't think it's available. It's not available on DVD, but it's easier copy to find because it does star George Lazenby, and he's been in that many movies.
And there are DVD rips of it online. Yeah. It's available on DVD.
It's available on DVD on Australia. You can probably get an import.
So what do you want to rate this? I give it maybe
I give it a 6.
I'm gonna go with 5.
I thought it was entertaining.
Just kidding. Okay. It's entertaining, but yeah, no story.
Okay, we're running low on time. Okay.
Yeah.
From 1976, directed by
Philippe Mora.
Yeah, this is Mad Dog Morgan. We don't really watch this one because we're both fans of Dennis Hopper.
And you had this on a public domain Westerns box with 20 of them, 20 mega Westerns, you know.
Yeah, it was one of those things you could buy for $5 and I had
Cracker Barrel and stuff.
Yeah.
We watched about half an hour of it. It's such a shit. It was like an awful VHS rip.
Yeah, and this movie, they show a lot of behind the scenes stuff in that documentary on this one. And it makes the movie look awesome. It's pretty much, it's a lot like Ned Kelly, if you ever seen Ned Kelly. It's just really about this, it's a Western. It's about this,
outlaw.
It's about this outlaw named Mad Dog Morgan, which is a real guy, just like Ned Kelly.
Yeah.
It's pretty much the same story as Ned Kelly.
And it's. Oh, but Dennis Hopper is just so bad in this movie.
Yeah, and Dennis Hopper, this is
the best stuff about this movie is the 76. Behind the scenes.
This one, Dennis Hopper was so high and so drunk constantly, where he was extremely difficult to work with.
He was, banned from not only driving in Australia, but from being a passenger in a car.
But yeah, and he was insane, bad. and you can tell in the movie that it's a first time director.
Okay, here's the main reason I was like, this isn't going to get any better after about half an hour in. Because Philippe Mora, 10 years later, after 10 years after this movie, 10 years to hone his directorial talent and every skill, you know, made Howling 2 Sturba Bitch Wolf. Or Sturba Bitch Werewolf, or Sturba Werewolf Bitch, whatever. So I knew that this filmmaker never gets much. This is like, he peaked with Howling 2.
Yeah.
Possibly with Howling 3. We haven't gotten there yet. But yeah, this...
And you can tell, it's a first-time director doing this, and you're working with an actor who's very difficult, always drunk, and the movie seems like that. I mean, it's oddly edited. It's almost Godard editing style.
But not on purpose.
Yeah.
You can see the seams, and they really... I mean, I don't really want to talk much more about this because we really got to move on. But
okay, move on. The next... we've rated this, and we didn't really finish it, so...
We're not going to rate it, yeah.
This one, Truman has a copy out. You can find... This is on DVD. Yeah. Okay, anyway.
Next movie.
From 1978.
Long Weekend.
Directed by Colin...
Eggleston.
Yeah, Long Weekend. Movie's pretty... I really like this movie.
I liked it a lot. Especially, after we finished watching it, and then we put in Patrick, and then during Patrick, I kept thinking about Long Weekend more.
Yeah, and Long Weekend's about these, the struggling,
A couple goes on vacation.
Yeah.
Just by themselves out in the wilderness, and they just gradually,
And this is their... They're trying to rehatch their marriage,
Yeah, it's another, Descent into Madness in the Outback.
Yeah, it reminds a lot of Wake and Frank, and it's just pretty much, they think animals are attacking, but they're just horrible people, and they're treating the environment horrible, and then they start, killing animals randomly, animals are killing them, and then they end up, trying to kill each other.
Well, they end up becoming really paranoid, and the wife leaves for a while, and then when she comes back, I don't want to give it away.
This is a very good movie. It's very dark,
very psychological. It calls to mind two movies, recent horror movies, Open Water,
yeah,
for sure, and Eden Lake, which you haven't seen. It's about a couple goes on vacation and shit goes wrong.
Yeah, it's a very basic story, but there's a lot of animal death scenes in this one, so if you're, most people would rather see a bus full of nuns die before they would see a dog die.
If it was a cute dog, not any dog really, because if it was ugly and helpless, But I'd give this movie. Since we are running out of time, I give it a flat 8 out of 10. I thought it was
And this one's on DVD.
Yeah, it's
this has a good DVD release.
We actually had this at our college library. It's at Alden Library. I'll return it tomorrow.
I definitely put it on Netflix queue. Whatever.
It's definitely worth checking out. It's really
check
good.
It out. Okay.
Next movie. Next Richard movie. Franklin, Hitchcock protege.
Also from 1978.
Patrick.
This is... this movie basically is a ripoff of Carrie. I've heard of this before I watched the documentary as well.
Yeah.
And I've seen it before I watched the documentary as well. Because it was one of the first movies I got from Netflix when I first signed up for that.
And it's also
and it's, you
know, an influence on Kill Bill.
Yeah.
At the very beginning of the
Kill Bill movies. Pretty much just about...
This guy's in a coma, he keeps his eyes open, and he's telekinetic.
Yeah, he sees a... he sees his parents... see his mom get murdered? He murdered his mom?
He murders his mom and her lover in the bath.
Yeah, and then...
Which also, this movie's got a PG rating, but that's a pretty extreme PG rating. Because there's like...
Well, I think it was before the R and stuff.
Yeah, but I mean, it's still rated. I guess it hasn't ever been resubmitted, but I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, this is a really creepy movie, and
the lead actor, he's
because he always has
really
his eyes
creepy,
open.
Really creepy, yeah.
And that's why it's creepy, because he always has his eyes open.
That is really unsettling, and like he looks like Garrett Graham.
Yeah,
kind of. And
the only time he ever does anything is at the very end after he just leaps out and runs into like a glass case.
Which they show that in the documentary.
Which is the only time you see him get to do anything, and it's so effective when he because you just don't see him move and crazy stuff happens.
As far as Carrie,
there's not a lot of death scenes. It's mostly just
it's a really well made knockoff of Carrie. Yeah,
yeah.
I honestly would probably watch this again over The Fury, which is also which is a Carrie, Carrie type movie made by the guy who made by De Palma. I thought that this movie was at least equally effective.
Yeah. This is a really enjoyable movie. I get it a 7 out of 10.
I'd probably give it an 8 as well.
This is on DVD.
So
far, Stone, Cars at 8 Paris, Mad Dog Morgan, Lost Weekend. Most of these are on DVD. There's a few. There's a few on our list. Even our next part, they're on DVD.
They're going to be on DVD, yeah.
But we try to find a lot so you guys can actually... find a copy of these.
Yeah.
And Patrick, it's a great movie.
And I highly recommend it.
We can't really go in huge detail on each of these because I think we jam-packed way too much movies and not enough time.
Well, no, we talked about Wake and Fright for about 20 minutes. That's what happened.
Yeah, and then we talked
it didn't
about
seem like
Friday
it,
the 13th, the longest time ever.
But let's get to Mad Max.
Okay, our last movie from the 70s is from 1979.
George Miller.
Directed by George Miller, and it's Mad Max.
George Miller was a doctor.
If you never watched Mad Max, stop listening. Watch Mad Max. Turn it back on.
Yes, no, just stop listening.
Mad Max is just... Everyone should know Mad Max. Hell, there's a fucking Nintendo game of it. Regular Nintendo game of Mad Max.
I know everything every Nintendo game's ever been based on. Ever. Everyone should know. No, I'm just kidding. Mad Max. If you don't know Mad Max, you've probably at least heard of Road Warrior. Although I would assume they both kind of come together.
Yeah, and it's
or Beyond
it's
Thunderdome.
Mad Max is your basic revenge western story.
Yeah,
and it has a lot of very similar like stagecoach style chase scenes. Mostly, Road Warrior has more. It's more.
Road Warrior's probably got the single greatest action sequence of all time ever.
Yeah, but Mad Max it has some of the best car chases I've ever seen.
There is one shot. I mean, towards the end, Max Rockatansky, Mel Gibson he's in the Interceptor. His last name is Rockatansky. He's in the Interceptor and he's coming up on a motorcycle, and it's like. I've never seen anything in a movie like, because, they're really doing it, for one, because they're fucking Australians, but even if, you didn't know it was from Australia, you would be like, how the fuck did they do that? And, it comes up on this motorcycle, and it's got to be going, 50 or 60 miles faster than the motorcycle. It's ridiculous. I can't even really describe it.
Yeah,
you just have to see it.
And there's this one shot where you see, the camera on the speedometer in the front end of the motorcycle, and you can tell the motorcycle's going 80, 90 miles per hour.
What you don't immediately realize is the cameraman's on the back, with the camera trained on the speedometer.
This is dangerous as hell, and it can hurt your equipment, because most of these are on a shoestring budget.
This is
probably the only camera
they
probably had,
too. Yeah.
And it's just the stuff they got away with and the stuff they did.
It's staggering.
It's amazing.
I honestly, between Mad Max and The Road Warrior... These are the two most impressive examples. It's proof that action choreography is A, much better without CGI, and B, much better when you have to be creative.
Yeah.
Because of your budget.
I first seen this movie when I was like maybe 8 years old. I remember I rented it from Video Barn. I rented this, Road Warrior, and Mad Max Beyond the Thunderdome. And I watched them all like one Saturday, during the day and stuff, and I loved all of those movies. Still do.
I remember the first version of Mad Max I saw was the VHS, which is the VHS copy which we had at the library,
DVD, which is like the newest DVD, the special edition one, has all the original dialogue in it.
Because
the VHS one has like
American dubbing.
So and it's but most people have seen it, so we don't need to talk about that. But if you need to rate it, I give it a 9.
I give it an 8. I reserve like a 9 and a, no, I think
this one's on DVD.
Yeah, this one's very much on DVD.
And I think that concludes the 1970s. Coming up on a 2-part, we talk about such movies as Road Games, The Survivor, Road Warrior, Turkey Shoot, Razorback, Dead End Driving, and Howling 3.
Turkey Shoot, aka.
We also have Next to Kin and Fair Game. These are.
Turkey Shoot, aka Escape 2000.
We have a lot. These are all movies they talk about in there.
And this is like we went more for the straight, you know, we went straight to like the horror and the action genres.
Because
those are definitely the most.
We talk about exploitation. That's what you have to get to. So, that concludes our part one.
A little podcasting.
So next week we'll have part two up and.
Yeah, next week we'll have part two and up and future episodes.
We still have all those movies to watch, so I'm looking forward to watch them all.
And we do have some future episodes planned past that to look forward to.
Yeah. So thank you for listening to Late Night Movie Emporium. I'm Emil Osman.
And I'm Andrew Ford.
So
we're going to leave you with...
See you in the funny pages.
We're going to leave you with some smog.
Smog?
That's the name of this song.
Okay, whatever. You pick the music.
I don't know. I like it. It's catchy. I'll see you there. In a cyclone of stones, wooden spikes in your hair, or maybe you'll be resting, leaning up against a busted fence. Pluck a bird from your coat. Then we're back up on the hard road.